10 years ago, we would provide an agency with a prediction that a patient was likely to go back to the hospital. We would give that to them at the beginning of the episode, and then they would use that as their kind of North Star from the standpoint of patient risk. Now, our customers are able to see, oh, after every visit, I can see how that risk is changing. And if there is significant changes in condition or decline or improvement, as a home health agency, I can use that movement to be a lot more agile.
Welcome to Transcending Home Care. Stan Massey of Transcend Strategy Group holds vital discussions with other experts on insights and ideas to help providers succeed in the ever-changing landscape of home care and senior care. For more than 20 years now, Stan has helped providers build their brands to increase referrals, admissions, staff retention, and performance scores. This episode features a conversation with special guest Elliot Wood, President and CEO of Medalogix. Elliot and Stan discuss how data-driven solutions, including predictive modeling, are empowering better, value-based care for patients at home.
Elliot, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm eager for our discussion about the impact of predictive modeling on improving the quality of home-based care.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about it.
Our pleasure. So let's start with what sparked your interest in predictive data for home health and hospice. What was the potential you saw in it?
Sure. Yeah, and I'll begin just with my personal background. And a lot of this laid the foundation, frankly, from a pure, I think, intellectual interest with what was possible with data and predictive modeling. By background, I was actually into psychology. So in college, had started on coursework with psychology. I was just fascinated with human behavior. As I got into psychology, specifically on like the statistics side, I was fascinated with the idea that you could describe human behavior mathematically. I went on to do some master's coursework in psychology, specifically on the quantitative side. I really enjoyed that work. It was not meant to be for me to be a clinician at the end of the day. So I left that master's work, but it had really served as a good foundation for me in terms of piquing my interest, I would say. My first job outside of college was working in marketing. And in that marketing job, my responsibilities were to help the team understand its data. And so it was a pretty big marketing team. It was a healthcare company called HealthStream here in Nashville. We had a great marketing team. And my job with them was to ensure that we had a good understanding of who our universe of customers were, who the contacts were, what types of messaging we needed to engage with them. And then my job was to really study that and understand, okay, what types of messaging is effective to what types of customers and what types of people. And the idea that you could predict some of these things specifically around human behavior was just fascinating to me. And so spent a lot of time with HealthStream, but really my passion was always with the data. I had another stop along the way at a company called Airstrip, and then spent a few years with Airstrip also working in data, less from a predictive modeling standpoint, more from a descriptive modeling and reporting on utilization and trying to help companies understand how the product that we had at Airstrip was impacting outcomes. And then in 2013, I met the founder of Medalogix through a friend of mine who was working here at the time. It was just a startup. So at that point, there were just four people working at the company. And it was a predictive modeling startup in healthcare. And it was just like right time, right place for me, given my experience.
Once you got to Medalogix, what were the immediate implications you saw of applying the predictive data to end of life and the care that was needed during that time?
So when I first started, there were two products at Medalogix. The core of the products were predictive models. One product's focus was predicting hospitalization risk over the course of a 60-day period. And then the other product, which would go on to become Medalogix Bridge and is a product that we still have today, was identifying patients who were on home health who were likely to pass away in the next 90 days. And so what I saw, I think, early and what the company was experiencing early was pretty fascinating in terms of 10 years ago in home health and hospice, there was not a lot of data science and there wasn't a lot of knowledge in the space around predictive modeling, how to use that in a way that could help you operationally. Most people in home health and hospice 10, 11 years ago's experience with data and analytics really was in the context of dashboards and operational reports and things like that. And so part of the learning, both for me and for the company, was, hey, you can develop these predictive models with the data that home health has, where you're predicting things like this patient is on home health, but they're likely to pass away. But the key learning, I think, for us very early on was it's one thing to predict that that outcome is likely to happen. It's another thing to make that prediction and provide that to a clinician in a way that the clinician will actually incorporate it and incorporate it in a way that they're creating better care plans and that, you know, as you follow kind of that decision process, wind up creating better outcomes for the patient. And so that was really the first insight, I think, as a company we had was, even as a predictive modeling company, we have to do just as much, if not more, work on the engagement with the customer and the operational change management as we do the data science up front.
Gotcha. And just to be clear, you said something about using the data that was available. Where exactly is that data coming from primarily? Is it Medicare or elsewhere?
Primarily coming from the customer's EMR. And so our customers today are home health and hospice customers. There are several EMRs in the space. So we connected directly with those EMRs. Initially, what we were really focused on leveraging was the OASIS. So the OASIS is both a standardized and structured assessment that CMS requires Medicare certified agencies to fill out for their patients. And that data set was very rich. And so we were able to leverage what was essentially a pretty limited data set in order to develop these models and predict outcomes like likelihood to pass away or likelihood to rehospitalize. We even early were using the OASIS to predict patients' likelihood to, after discharge from home health, need to come back. We were really using that to help agencies understand what a patient's likelihood to decline was after discharge. And so there was just a whole lot of utility with that data set specifically. I think over time, what has really progressed in our space is one, the modeling techniques themselves. You know, historically, we were like a predictive modeling shop using logistic regression and linear models and things like that. Because we had a limited data set and we knew when we were going in to do an integration with the EMR, what items we needed in order to predict something. And, you know, that was important because integrations with EMRs are not cheap. They're very expensive technical initiatives. And so the ability to go in and grab the data that you want, develop an integration that pulls that information over routinely, run that against that data against your model, and then provide that in software to the customer was really our play. As time has gone on, as I mentioned, like there's been a gradual evolution beyond logistic progression into more, I would say, like complex modeling techniques like machine learning and neural networks. And we're doing some things with large language models. And so all of that modeling evolution has just been a pretty fascinating and rapid thing over the last 10 years. But the other, I would say, very important technical innovation isn't just the new machine learning techniques that are available. There's also new technology available that allows companies like Medalogix to move data around at a significantly lower cost. And that is important when, like, as you're graduating into these more complex modeling capabilities where you don't necessarily know the variables that you are going to use as you develop a predictive model, you have a lot more luxury because you're using these more complex models where the machine is really telling you, hey, this is what's predictive of an outcome. And we're able to move a lot more data to the model itself. So as an example, now, 10 years later, one of the richest sources of data that we have when we're making a prediction is the nurse's note itself. And so 10 years ago, we were using that OASIS to predict an outcome, and then we would update that prediction after like a 60-day period when the agency went and updated the OASIS again. Now, because of these new technologies that are available to us, we're able to make a prediction after every visit. And so for home health, like, that's a pretty significant innovation because, again, 10 years ago, we would provide an agency with a prediction that a patient was likely to go back to the hospital. We would give that to them at the beginning of the episode, and then they would use that as their kind of North Star from the standpoint of patient risk. Now, our customers are able to see, oh, after every visit, I can see how that risk is changing. And if there is significant changes in condition or decline or improvement, as a home health agency, I can use that movement to be a lot more agile and to, especially in today's, you know, resource environment in home health and in hospice, that ability to be agile and make changes to the care plan along the way have been a pretty critical improvement for us.
I could see why. How accurate percentage-wise have your predictions become over time? And you just mentioned a couple of instances where home health agencies would be more likely to tell if someone was going to go back to the hospital or come back onto their care. But how accurate are the predictions, and how you see the agencies that are using the data are able to improve the quality and value of care provided?
Sure. Yeah. And so I'll use hospice as an example because that it is a great model. So we have a product called Muse, where it's the exact same technique as I just described in home health, where we're getting this data from the EMR. We're running that data through our model. It is largely based on the clinical narrative from the clinician who's been in the home with the patient. We are making these predictions after every visit for that patient while they're in hospice. What we're predicting with that information is that patient's likelihood to pass away in the next 7 to 10 days. And so you can imagine with these patients who have been on hospice for a long time, you know, they're pretty steady state for a long time. And then in the last week, you just see this crash occur. Well, what we are doing is predicting that patient's likelihood to pass away in the next 7 to 10 days so that the agency can get ahead of that crash. So they can, before that crash occurs, make changes to the resource plan as appropriate. And so with that model specifically, when we're predicting that a patient is very critical, like the highest criticality, that patient's likelihood to pass away within the next week is above 90%.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it is very, very accurate. And what we've seen is that our customers are using this modeling capability because it's so accurate to really reimagine their staffing plan. And so the first kind of like use case is, let's make sure that when we have a patient on our census who is likely to pass away in the next week, that we are doing what we need to do to move resources around to ensure that our clinicians are in the home every day during the last week of life. Because what we have seen is, in the last week of life, typically, when the agency is not there, that's when bad outcomes in hospice happen.
Exactly.
We're all just people, right? And so even those of us who are very close to healthcare, who are caretakers for our family, that last week of life is a very scary thing. And when you see your significant other struggling, when you're experiencing that, your first reaction is, oh, I'm going to call the hospital, or I'm going to call the ER, ambulance. And then the ambulance comes, they pick up the patient, they have to take the patient to the ER, they admit them into the hospital, and then your significant other passes away in the hospital, which is exactly what they did not want. And so what we've seen remedy that is, the hospice agency is there in the home with the patient, with the family, ensuring that the family is appropriately educated about what's about to happen. If the family needs anything, make sure you call us, your hospice agency. We will answer. Don't call the ER. Don't call an ambulance. Our customers are able to be very intentional about that because they know with confidence that that event is about to take place. The flip side is, for your patients who are not likely to pass away in the next week, I think everywhere in healthcare, resources right now are at a premium. There are clinician shortages everywhere. Hospice is no exception. Home health is no exception. And so for your patients who are on the other end of that continuum in terms of risk, there's an ability to leverage these models to understand, okay, maybe we don't need to be in this patient's home three times a week this week, or two times, or whatever. Maybe a phone call will suffice. Or maybe we can send a social worker or a chaplain or another type of service this week, as opposed to sending our RN, who we should ensure is actually in the home of someone who's passing away this week, right? As opposed to someone who's going to be on our census for another month, 2 months, 3 months. And so that's a practical real world example of how the model is being used today and impacting real people and their care at the end of life.
That is a really great example. Appreciate you sharing that. As artificial intelligence and machine learning continue to evolve at an amazing pace, how do you see your solutions improving even more in the future?
We still have models that we deploy into the market today that are logistic regression. We have neural network models where we're getting a lot of data from the EMR and we're feeding a lot of data to the model and frankly just letting the model kind of figure it out. Those are very powerful tools. The craze in the world today with GPT is really about the large language model coming onto the scene. And those have been around for a little bit, but like GPT was really the group, and OpenAI is the company that developed GPT and made ChatGPT available to the market, or to like the individual to go and use. And so that really kind of mainstreamed that particular tool. By tool, I mean like large language models. And I'll say, like, Justin, we are at the very beginning of understanding what generative AI is able to do. And I, for one, am a believer that the hype about them is real. And the ability of a large language model to synthesize just significant amounts of information into a very small, pertinent amount of information for a clinician, it's pretty incredible. We have a product that we just launched into the market called Medalogix Pulse Referrals and Admissions, where we are able to take a referral document from a referral source into home health. And so that document is coming from the hospital, or that document's coming from the physician in the community. And those documents can be anywhere from 5 pages to 200. And nobody has time to read those documents, especially the ones that are 200 pages. And so what's happening often is those documents are coming to the agency. There's just a very specific amount of information that we want to go find about this patient, who their physician is, did a face-to-face occur, is that within the documents, who is the payer, really to just get the admission started. And then, you know, an agency gets that information, takes the document, uploads it into the EMR, and you have all of this rich patient history that is just lost. One. And then two, you have a clinician, this happens both in home health and hospice, you have a clinician who then is walking into the home for that initial visit and asking the patient, why am I here to see you today? And so what we're doing is we're taking that document that's coming in and we're using GPT to read it and then basically provide a one-page cliff note summary back to the clinician around this is what that document says. And that summary includes all kinds of things like, what are the risk factors? Are there allergies? There's a patient history summary, but there's also the ability to code. And so we have been able, with pretty good accuracy, to, even before the clinician walks into the home, know what the primary and secondary diagnoses are for that patient just by having this new capability read the document.
Well, that is pretty amazing. Thank you for that. Well, to wrap up today, Elliot, how do data-driven solutions help strengthen value-based care?
Home health and hospice historically have been just relegated by their payer partners to fee-for-service structure, despite the fact that there is immense amount of opportunity for our customers to participate in value-based arrangements and or partner strategically with value-based care providers to keep patients in the home and help patients get better in the home, which is the most cost-effective venue of care today. And so for us at Medalogix, for me personally, what excites me about what we're doing, but also like the evolution of these tools and what I think is possible, is all of these tools that we're developing today are really designed to not just help our customers in like the fee-for-service world that they're in, but it helps align them to future value-based opportunity, because what we're doing is we're identifying where there is risk of that patient not being able to stay at home and where there are opportunities to adjust the care plan and or the care setting so that we're giving that patient the best opportunity to stay at home. And that, at the end of the day, is the opportunity for our customers to really partner with other risk-bearing entities or payers or other healthcare organizations that are really managing risk today I'm just excited about the opportunity to be here and be a part of seeing those different concepts converge.
Very good. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise in joining us today. And we wish you all the best of success for Medalogix and your clients as you continue to apply predictive modeling to better value-based care in the future. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Stan. I appreciate it, man.
For those of you who have been listening to our podcast since the beginning, I wanted to let you know this is the last episode where I will be serving as the main host. I'm turning over those duties to Transcend's new Chief Strategy Officer, Tony Kudner. It's been my privilege to interview home care industry leaders over the past few years and share keen insights that we hope you found relevant in helping your business be more successful. Tony will be carrying the torch to bring you new revelations in future episodes. Thank you so much for listening, and keep tuning in. This is Stan Massey, signing off.
Thanks for listening. Watch for future episodes of Transcending Home Care on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. For more content, visit transcend-strategy.com.